this year's presidential nominees bear the dubious distinction of being the most unpopular choices running in decades. So we're focusing on people who are excited about the candidates. Today we hear from Hillary Clinton supporters in Illinois.
I think there are enough people to elect Hillary Clinton who believe that she will be a great president. I mean, she knows every single leader of the world. Hillary Clinton's the one.
That's Illinois Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky at the Democratic National Convention. We talked to some of her other supporters today. And we speak with hip-hop artist Rhymefest, whose interaction with Chicago police after being robbed last weekend has gained nationwide attention.
They put a gun to my head. They demanded that I give them my wallet. The first thing that I did was come here to the police station, sir. All I want to do is make a report that I've been robbed.
That's all this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. All this week on the program, we've been talking politics with an eye to the White House race this fall. Unfortunately, one of the issues that's characterized this year's presidential race is the tone and how voters feel about the candidates. So much we're seeing lots of doubt that either candidate would make a good president, according to the latest Pew Research polls. Another focus group in Washington, in Wisconsin last week, when asked to name a scent or smell that best describes the 2016 campaign, used terms like sulfur, rotten eggs, garbage, or manure. That small group was evenly divided between Clinton, Trump, and undecided voters. So we thought we would hear from Illinois voters who do have positive things to say about the candidates. Yesterday, we heard excitement from Trump supporters. Today, we're talking about Hillary Clinton. Tomorrow, we're going to be wrapping it all up with analysts who will help us better understand the demographics behind support for both major candidates. What are you hearing from Hillary Clinton that appeals to you? Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, or you can tweet to 21st Show. That's 21ST Show. Again, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Let's start today with Clinton campaign volunteer Shannon O'Keefe Matthew. She worked against Clinton in the 2008 campaign, campaigning actively for Barack Obama from the start. But this year, the Chicago mom says she's with Hillary, and she joins us now to explain why. Hi, Shannon. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you for having me, Nyla.
You worked on the campaign, as I mentioned, back in 2008. And I guess back then, theoretically, you were working against Hillary Clinton. Why are you supporting her this time around?
So in 2008, one of the big things for me in my support for now President Obama was the fact that I wanted a fresh face in politics. I wanted someone who didn't have necessarily, you know, the baggage attached to his name to make for any gridlock once you would become president. 8 years later, we see that there's been a ton of gridlock, and now my position is kind of done a 180, and I want someone who has those ties. I want someone who has experience in Washington and who knows people on the other side of the aisle, so maybe we can break through and get some things done.
Did you originally support her during the primaries?
During the primary, I was pregnant, and I was concentrating on becoming a new mom, so I didn't really have a candidate. I knew I would end up supporting whoever our Democratic nominee would be, but I wasn't necessarily for Secretary Clinton or Senator Sanders. It was more, let me see how this kind of shakes out, and once, you know, I get adjusted to my new life and my new role, you know, I'll see who I'll be campaigning actively for. My husband did campaign very actively and very strongly for Senator Sanders. So there was also a part where I didn't want to go out and actively campaign against him. But I always had kind of more of a stronger leaning towards Secretary Clinton.
And has your husband changed his mind, by the way?
He's in the same boat as me. He wants the Democratic nominee to be president. He definitely is volunteering with me and is actively supporting Secretary Clinton. There was a little bit of heartbreak, but then during the convention, you know, just seeing the overwhelming amount of support and the tone that the Democratic Party is taking, he definitely was like, okay, I'm on board with this woman. We need to get to work.
So congratulations on the baby, by the way, Shannon. And I know you have a six-month-old son. How much does that affect your decision? How much are you thinking about your son, and how important is the presidency now because of your baby?
I mean, it's a completely new world to me, and things that I've always been a strong advocate for families and for working families, especially, and making sure that, you know, working families get as much help as, you know, we can provide for them and make sure that it's not, you know, so difficult to have a child this day and age. when I became a mom, these were no longer like abstract concepts. They became things that really affected my life. And when I had my son, my family was not covered under the Family Medical Leave Act. My husband owns his own law firm, and they're too small to be covered. I worked for a small law firm. And if it wouldn't have been for short-term disability, I would have had my son on Thursday and been back at work on Monday.
So for you, you think it's really important to have a candidate who's focused on these issues, particularly health care and other issues that really affect working families.
Exactly. I mean, health care is a big one. Making sure that families get paid leave for both mother and father is another big one. Having universal pre-K is, even though my son's only 6 months old, we're already, you know, thinking about school and how we can best set him up so he can achieve the most for his life. And these are all issues that affect every family every day. And now that we've been thrust into this new role, they're kind of hitting home with us, and it's become a major focal point for me.
So you've been working on the campaign. You've been volunteering. Are you seeing, are you trying to convince other members of your family, other people to vote for Hillary Clinton, or are they already there?
Most of our family and friends are there. We do have some family who's on the other side of the aisle, and they're not exactly thrilled with their nominee. So it's kind of been a more subtle, you know, laying a little groundwork like, well, you know, this is what we can get done with Hillary. And if you're not thrilled with your candidate, why just vote for the person with the R next to their name? You should be excited about your candidate. It should be someone who shares your values and your ideals. On the other end, we have people who also actively campaign for Senator Sanders who are still a little, you know, do I want to get behind Hillary? They, you know, fought so hard for their candidate, and they're so disappointed that he didn't get the nominee, that they're still kind of wavering on whether or not to support Secretary Clinton over a third-party candidate. And really the argument we're making with some of them is that she stands for 99.9% of the exact same things that Senator Sanders did. Is it because you're just upset that your candidate lost, or is it really policy-based? And if it's policy-based, then this is definitely the candidate for you.
Yeah. What else do you say to try to convince people?
I mean, one of the big things that I found resonates is just having a personal story and a personal narrative. So being able to talk about my son and how, you know, paid family leave is a big thing for me. That gets to people. Another thing is just thinking about the future and thinking about the kind of person we want to have leading our country. It terrifies me to have someone like Donald Trump, who has his finger, you know, on the nuclear launch codes, who could start a war at any moment, who's also the same man who can be baited by a tweet.
Right. And Shannon, I know that there's also, to focus it back on Hillary Clinton, I think there's also been there has been criticism about her, and I'm thinking of the email scandal. You know, there was news this morning about the FBI possibly releasing more information about that. What's your response to all of those criticisms of her?
I mean, the thing with the emails has, it's not the most positive light to shine on her candidate, obviously. However, there's been proof time and time again that the server was never hacked, and I think that that's a big distinction to tell people, that there's all these theoretical, her server could have been hacked, but it wasn't. Also, the FBI has ruled that there is no impropriety, and there have been judges who have, you know, denied requests to keep opening this back up. And I think those, while it doesn't look good, it's definitely not something that I'm focused on. I think there are bigger issues, and I think that this is kind of a red herring that the other side is using to draw attention away from the fact that Secretary Clinton actually has plans and ideas and experience, whereas Donald Trump does not.
So for you, the fact that she still did it, you know, FBI Director James Comey said, he said she shouldn't be charged with anything, but she was extremely careless with classified material. For you, that's not, that's overshadowed by everything else that she offers.
Definitely. I mean, and also as an attorney, if you're not going to charge someone, there's a reason for not charging them. And so that speaks volumes to me, as well as these bigger other issues.
Shannon, what do you think it would mean for Hillary Clinton as a woman to be elected president of the United States? Does that matter to you?
That definitely matters to me. I think she is a great woman. She definitely does her part to show that women can do anything that they put their mind to, and that we're just as tough and strong and knowledgeable as men. Donald Trump does not always have the most positive things to say about women. And I think it'll be very interesting to see a debate between Donald Trump and Secretary Clinton, where he's going to be confronted by the fact that he has these, you know, sexist tendencies and he says sexist things. And now he's actually running against someone who is of the opposite gender. I'm kind of curious to see how he's going to react to that.
Well, that's going to be coming up in less than a month now, the first debate between the two candidates. I want to thank Shannon O'Keefe Matthew, Clinton campaign supporter, campaign volunteer, joining us from Chicago. Shannon, thanks.
Thank you so much.
We're talking today to Hillary Clinton supporters in Illinois, talking to them about why they're excited about the candidate. If you're a Hillary Clinton supporter, you can give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. Yesterday, we talked to Trump supporters. Today's Clinton. Tomorrow, we're going to do a little analysis behind the support for both campaigns. I wanted to go now to two other women who are also Clinton supporters, both joining us on the line from Chicago. Rebecca Seif is a lecturer at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago, where she's also the academic and program director of Women in Leadership for the Public Good. She's the author of Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. Rebecca, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Niall. It's a pleasure.
I also want to welcome Tracy Seffel. She's a communications consultant. She was a senior advisor for the Ready for Hillary Super PAC until it was disbanded when she formed her campaign last year. Back in 2008, she was also an advisor to the Clinton campaign and also joins us from her home in Chicago. Hey, Tracy, thank you for being with us as well.
Hey, Nyla, thank you.
Tracy, let me start with you. As I mentioned, you've been an advisor to the campaign. You're now a surrogate for the campaign. There was so much discussion at the beginning of the race about Hillary Clinton and how much she would bring levels of passion like President Obama inspired. We just heard Shannon talking about that. Do you feel like you're seeing that level of support in Illinois for Hillary Clinton right now?
I do, in as much as this has been a very long campaign, and that's important to keep in mind when we think about your question, that her campaign kicked off Roosevelt Island, beautiful visuals, fantastic speech, and from there it was just really a long slog, and that has an effect on voters. Voters may pay attention more at one point and less at another point. And it can kind of wax and wane. When it became clear that Donald Trump was going to be the nominee, I think that had a very positive effect on Clinton's supporters. It became clear now, what is this race about? Who are the two candidates that we'll ultimately be looking at? And that was a turning point for sure for enthusiasm. And most recently, with the convention, which Shannon, of course, also mentioned, it was phenomenal, and we've seen in many different types of polls since the convention that her support is truly coalescing.
And when you say that, I mean, when we look at the polls are probably closer than what you were saying would indicate. What would you attribute that to then?
The polls being close,
indicating that it's a closer race than what you're. I mean, when we're looking at, I think the most recent poll that came out earlier this week was about a 7-point differential between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Her, of course, 7 points ahead of Donald Trump. So the gap is maybe not. I guess I'm just wondering, to your mind, I imagine you would think the gap would be wider at this point.
Well, certainly in a historical context, a 7-point lead in a presidential election is mammoth, and that's important to keep in mind. But perhaps you're also thinking of some of the states where it is closer. Iowa, for example, where I grew up, or Ohio, where we see it tight. And that's very interesting to see why voters are sticking with Donald Trump in swing states like those. And we'll see that reflected in the messages the candidates will be delivering over these next 10 weeks.
Rebecca, I wanted to bring you into the conversation for a minute. Does it surprise you, and I'm just curious your perspective, being in Chicago, does it surprise you that many people don't seem to claim Hillary Clinton as their own homegrown candidate in the same way that I feel like Chicago very much embraced and still does President Obama as sort of their son?
Well, I think I'm 2 points on that. One is I think that the sort of primary constituency that's totally embraced Hillary Clinton is women. She's, you know, 24 points ahead in some polls over Trump, and that's women of every kind, and of course women who live in Chicago. I think the second thing that's important to keep in mind is that President Obama came here, you know, as an adult, worked here for quite a while, married here, lived here, and by contrast, Secretary Clinton left to go to college and never returned to live here. So I think the facts are different, and I think that the important thing is, in any electoral context, is does a candidate, particularly for the presidency, have a really engaged set of supporters, and both of them do.
Well, when you mention supporters, Tracy, on Monday, Secretary Clinton is going to be attending a Labor Day picnic in the Quad Cities. I think she did the same thing last year. This year, I feel like there's a lot of major federal elected officials in Illinois. They're going to be with her. Senator Dick Durbin, Representative Tammy Duckworth, of course, who is in her own race. State officials like Treasurer Mike Frericks. Tracy, how important is it that support from, as Rebecca's talking about, these federal elected officials as well as state officials, how important do you think that's going to be to help get the vote out in the fall?
I think it's hugely important, and I would invoke the words of interim chair of the DNC, Donna Brazile, who has been giving impassioned reasonings about why it's the entire ballot that is of such critical importance in November, that we know about the stakes for the presidential race, I mean, the Supreme Court and so forth. But really, Republicans have been making significant inroads in these so-called down-ballot races.
Tracy, I'm going to stop you there for a second just because we've got to take a break, but we are going to continue this conversation in just a minute. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking politics this week on The 21st, national politics, the White House. Yesterday, we spoke with Donald Trump supporters. Today, we're talking to Hillary Clinton supporters. What excites them about the candidate? If you are a Hillary Clinton supporter, you can join our conversation. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. My guest with me, Rebecca Scythe, teaches or lectures at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. She's the author of Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office. Tracy Seffels, also on the line with us. She's a communications consultant, previous senior advisor to the Hillary Clinton campaign in 2008, senior advisor to the Ready for Hillary Super PAC, a surrogate for the campaign now. Tracy, I wanted you to just finish that thought that you were talking about. You were talking about all of the, I'm just curious about one thing we've heard is just as we've heard over and over about voters seeming not super inspired by the candidates. I wonder, as you're talking about all of the entire ballot, how important you think it is to have other officials kind of rallying and getting the vote out, not just for Hillary Clinton, but then maybe bringing in people to vote for other parts of the ticket as well.
Hugely important, Nyla. And I'm happy to see that Secretary Clinton will have that crowd of other elected officials with her over the weekend. I think that it shows a strong message. It's certainly not something that the GOP can replicate right now. And that's also a contrast that voters will note. So for her to have that support, it's terrific. And most importantly, it is our hope that it translates into support all the way up and down that ballot.
Tracy, yesterday we had a lot of discussion with Trump supporters about immigration. And we actually also noted that, according to polls, Trump has about 18 to 23% support among Hispanic voters. What kind of outreach do you think the Clinton campaign needs to be doing, particularly to the Latino community? And on a related note, how important do you think immigration and the issue of immigration is to every voter in this campaign?
It's hard to generalize for every voter. I mean, that's just, there's too much heterogeneity to really answer that question. But immigration is an important reflection of a lot of voters' lived experiences, whether it's in their local community with their specific economic situations, communities that may have been hard hit by job losses, understanding the changing demographics in various states and urban areas, communities, as I mentioned. So there are, immigration is an issue that pulls on many strings for people, and I understand the passions behind that. Of course, even in the last 18 hours, we've now seen Donald Trump saying he's going to go to Mexico, a sort of audacious move. And it will be interesting to see how voters respond. I think his supporters right now are a little confused as to what it is he actually stands for. And I think this is yet another example of where Hillary Clinton supporters can feel confident that their candidate is at least consistent.
Yeah, and I know they're supposed to, expected later today, I believe after that visit to Mexico, is what the Trump campaign is saying is a major policy speech about immigration. Rebecca, I wanted to, you've made it so much of your life's work to focus on women being political and public leaders. That's what you do at the University of Chicago. That's what your book is about. I wanted to ask what your personal reaction is to the possibility of a first female presidential candidate. Is that what excites you the most about Hillary Clinton?
Well, what excites me the most is she is, I think as President Clinton pointed out, you know, about the most qualified person to be president our country's ever had. And I think that at this time of great trouble and uncertainty, we want the best qualified person. So that's the thing that excites me the most. I think that it's also true that you cannot undervalue or underestimate the importance of seeing a woman in a position a woman's never held before, just as we saw when President Obama was elected. And, you know, when I think about it, and what jumps to mind is this photo, I'm sure you remember it as well, of President Obama in the Oval Office with a young African-American man, probably 5 or 6 years old, a boy, and he leaned down and, you know, wanted to feel
He wanted to touch President Obama's hair. Right. He said,
yeah.
Is your hair like mine? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And so what that's about is for that child, and that will be true of every girl around the world, we'll look at Hillary Clinton if she's in the Oval Office and say, is your hair like mine? Are you wearing a dress like I'm wearing or a pantsuit like I'm wearing? I think that you can't be what you can't see. I think that's the expression people use. And so, yes, I'm very excited about the chance that this or the impetus this will give to women to engage publicly. I also would say one other thing that I am very excited about, and that is Secretary Clinton's focus on equal pay and making that a policy priority. That's going to, if she's able to work on that and get the Congress with her and others, you know, that will revolutionize the lives of so many American families for the better. And, you know, there's just no underestimating how profound that will be if a woman maid gets the same pay as a woman janitor, and therefore what she can do for her family that she wouldn't have been able to do before.
Certainly that's something President Obama, I'm thinking of the Lilly Ledbetter Act. I mean, some certain
right.
things that President Obama started working on. Do you feel like that's a really important issue for you personally and for the country, having equal pay for women?
There's no, you know, what people want, in the, you know, no matter who they are, no matter where they live, is they want economic security for their families. And when the divorce rate is 50%, when the vast majority of poor families in this country are, you know, women single heads of households, you know, you have to have a commitment to equal pay, which President Obama has had, and hopefully there'll be a second President Clinton and she will continue. So, yes, I'm personally excited about it. But more importantly, I think that that kind of policy shift will change everyone's world for the better.
Tracy, all across the country this week on NPR stations, we've been talking about America's place in the world. And I wanted to ask both of you, how much of a priority is it for you that our next president be as focused on international affairs and America's place in the global scene versus our domestic needs?
It's incredibly important to me that we see a seasoned and knowledgeable leader on both fronts. What I see in international news is seemingly a near endless series of very scary stories. The world is a frightening place when you look at it at many angles right now, with strife and conflict and a lot of torment for people around the world. I believe, as Secretary Clinton believes, that America has a responsibility as a global actor, and she is by far the most knowledgeable when it comes to that. I think she has one ad on heavy rotation on cable news right now, maybe broadcast too, where she quotes and shows a clip of Donald Trump saying he knows more about ISIS than the military generals, which is such an the claim is so audacious on so many levels, and the point of Hillary's ad is to say just how dangerous it is for that kind of rhetoric. And an international actor needs to be a level-headed actor as well. And again, this is yet another place where we see the contrast between Hillary and Trump, and it's a scary one, and it matters a lot to me.
One question for both of you. We started talking about this with Shannon a little bit about the repeated headlines and investigations and not investigations into emails when Secretary Clinton, shortly before she became Secretary of State for President Obama. Curious your thoughts, Rebecca, Tracy, either of you jump in here, on this, how much this factors into the repeated, as we've been talking about through the hour and yesterday as well, how much people feel like they don't have levels of trust in either candidate, and particularly in Hillary Clinton in this case, how much of the emails are related, this whole email scandal is related to people feeling like whether or not they can trust her?
You know, what I would say, I think that is, you know, let's look at the sort of long view of history and look at the fact that it's been true for Hillary Clinton for 25 years since she was first lady, that she has been viewed with suspicion on a range of topics, and none of them, you know, have sort of borne out as being material in a significantly bad way. And I think in concert with that is the fact that there isn't a politician on the face of the planet, you know, who hasn't made errors in judgment. So while it's true that she has made them just like others have, I think the important thing here is that there is structural sexism in our world, and it impacts women at every level, including Secretary Clinton. There are thousands of examples of comments that have been made about her, some cannot be repeated on the radio, that have not been made about male candidates. So I think that, or judgments that are harsher. So I think if you were to talk to other women leaders, they would tell you that's what happens, and that's what one has to be prepared for. And while it may affect people's judgments, I'm just going to go out there and work harder and harder every single day, you know, as we've seen Secretary Clinton do.
One last question for you, Tracy. As we've been talking about the negative feelings that voters have, given that, what do you think needs to change in terms of the candidates and the tone to have bring more voters to the polls in November?
Well, in many ways, there are two simultaneous campaigns happening. One is what we see on television or hear about on your show or read about in the papers. And the second is what happens day after day, event after event, with the campaign and the candidate themselves. And I'm reminded of a very special day last summer where my 7-year-old niece got to meet Secretary Clinton, and they stood and talked, and Hillary held her hand the whole time, and they talked about her granddaughter Charlotte, and they sort of bonded in this very intimate one-on-one conversation with a grandmother and a 7-year-old. And that, to me, is the campaign that we don't get to hear a lot about or see as much of, but that's where a true character of a candidate comes out. And that was yet another moment for me that solidified my support for Hillary.
That's Tracy Seffel joining us from Chicago, a communications consultant, a former advisor to the Hillary campaign. Thanks also to Rebecca Sive, who's lectures at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. She's also the author of Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been following the story in recent months about the push to overhaul the way legislative districts are drawn in Illinois. The latest attempt by Independent Maps to ask voters to approve a constitutional amendment was blocked last week by the Illinois Supreme Court. If passed, it would have created an independent commission to decide on boundaries for legislative districts. Right now, lawmakers do that with a sign-off from the governor. Independent Maps held a news conference in the last hour to announce next steps. Matt Dietrich has been following the news. He's the editor of Reboot Illinois and joining us on the line from his office. Hey, Matt, welcome back to the 21st. What did Independent Maps have to say this morning about what's next for them?
Independent Maps says that what they've done is they've filed a petition for rehearing, which is the only appeal available to the state Supreme Court. And what they want to do is re-argue the case because they are contending that the decision that was handed down last week was inconsistent. And the reason it was inconsistent was because in one part it said that the amendment was unconstitutional because it included a role for the state auditor general, who's not part of the General Assembly. And yet in another part of the decision, it said that surely you could find another person from outside the General Assembly to fulfill the auditor general.
Matt, are you there? Looks like we've lost Matt Dietrich. We've been talking to him about the Independent Maps initiative. As he was just saying this morning, there was a news conference held by supporters of the Independent Maps. That was something that was ruled unconstitutional by the Illinois Supreme Court last week. Let's try to get Matt back on the line, if you'll hold on just a minute here. Hey, Matt, sorry about that. We were just telling us about what they were trying to do. I wanted to ask you another question. Shortly after the Supreme Court ruled the ballot measure unconstitutional, former Governor Pat Quinn came out with his own proposal. What's he trying to do?
Well, he says that the Independent Map amendment was too complicated. And he speaks with a bit of authority here because he has led the only citizen-led
right.
initiative to change
mm-hmm.
the Constitution since the 1970 Constitution was ratified. He said in a press conference yesterday that he thought that the Independent Map Amendment was too complicated. It needs to be cleaner. And kind of between the lines, he seemed to say, don't give the justices an invitation to pick out things that they can find it unconstitutional for. Now, there may be problems with Governor Quinn's. He's got a different role for the state Supreme Court. There are questions about, you know, what would happen in the event of a stalemate, which always seems to happen in Illinois. There are questions with Governor Quinn's proposal, but seems like now we have two competing versions going here. And if the Independent Map Group gets a rehearing, which I have no idea, I am not familiar with that process, and I don't think it's happened very often. But if they were, and if they were to lose that appeal, then Quinn's bill would be the one that remains. The question is now, would Governor Rauner get behind Pat Quinn's redistricting effort?
And unfortunately, Matt, we're out of time, but that's the real question, right? Because we know Governor Rauner's also been outspoken about changing the process. So
sure.
I know you'll keep an eye on it. We will as well. That's Matt Dietrich. He's editor of Reboot Illinois on the Independent Maps Initiative. Hey, Matt, thanks for joining us for that quick update. Thanks for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This past Saturday morning, hip-hop artist Che Rempess-Smith ended up, unfortunately, in the middle of a national debate over communities and policing. After being robbed at gunpoint around 7:30 in the morning, Che Smith went to his neighborhood Southside police station to file a report. And there, his reception at the station, he videotaped part of his attempt to file this report to let them know that he had been robbed. I'll let you listen to it yourself.
I told you exactly what my problem was.
You can't do that.
I can use my camera.
Not in a police station, sir.
I can't use my camera.
No, you're gonna
I would like. I cannot make a report on me being robbed.
I'm about to give you a report sir.
I can't make a report of me being robbed.
With the supervisor.
What did the supervisor say?
He said, "Ask you to leave."
Why?
Because you're not at. You weren't given the information that we needed to take your report.
What information do you need,
okay. Sir?
What information do you need? I would like to give you the information to report that I've been robbed this morning.
She's a Grammy and Oscar award-winning hip-hop artist who for a few years ago even tried to run for political office in Chicago. He's also the co-founder of Donda's House, a Chicago youth arts nonprofit named after Kanye West's mom. He tweeted that video. Several thousand retweets later, within hours, he had a Twitter apology from the Chicago Police Department. On Monday, Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel said the officers involved would be disciplined. Che joins us now from Chicago. Hey, Che, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Nyla, thank you for having me.
First, I want to say I'm sorry that you were robbed, and I'm glad that you're okay. What happened?
Well, you know, there were two things that happened that need to be fixed in this city. You know, one is that I was robbed at 7:30 in the morning on a Saturday in a public space. And two is that I was almost robbed of my taxpayer dollars when trying to make a report. You know, if we start with the Saturday, writing music, I'm in my car. I pull my car over to actually do some writing. And, you know, when you put your car in park, the doors automatically unlock on many vehicles. I paid it no attention. I'm starting to write. Someone entered the car, gun first, sat in the passenger seat, and said, "You're going to die today."
No.
And, you know, I was shocked. And I said, "Well, you know, what do you want? You know, just take what you want." And he says, "Give me the money. I want all of your money." So I went in my pocket. I gave him my wallet. He says, "You don't know how close you were to being shot." And he left. This happened all of 3 minutes. Yet it took an hour to even get to the first part of making a police report when I decided to report it.
So you thankfully you're okay. You give him your wallet. Did you just go straight to the police station?
No, I didn't. You know, one of the things I debated in my mind was, you know, this guy's wearing a ski mask. He's wearing black pants, black shirt. They're not going to catch this guy. Maybe, you know, you just chalk it up to a loss. You know, here we are. You know, we're traumatized. We've normalized much of this behavior in Chicago.
Yeah.
And so then I thought, you know, I talk to young people every day. I debate with them about how we have to make the system work to our advantage. We can't just say whatever for the system. You know, what if this guy would have shot someone that day? You know, what if in that area other people would have gotten robbed? Then I would have been complicit in not making a report in those crimes. You know, and so, at least to me, you know. So I go into the police station. The first lady, she's sitting at the desk. She's eating cookies and playing Candy Crush on her iPad. So I said, you know, I'd like to report a robbery. You know, I was calm. I was as calm as could be at that type of situation. I said, I'd like to report a violent robbery. Someone stuck me up with a gun. The first officer says, "Okay, hold on one moment." She looks down at her iPad and continues playing Candy Crush. I said, "Really? Really?" You know, and so another officer said, "Well, come over here. I'll help you." I go over to the other officer. She says, "Put your hands on the desk so I can feel secure, first of all." That was bizarre to me, you know, but no matter. I put my hands on the desk. She said, "Well..."
So she said that she actually said, "So I can feel secure, put your hands on the desk?"
Yes. She said, "Put both hands on the desk so I can feel secure." So I said, "Okay." You know, I put both hands on the desk. Then she says to me, as I'm telling her the story, she says, "It's funny, the robber didn't get your phone. Must not have been that good of a robber, huh?" Now I'm feeling patronized. So I say, you know, this one over here is eating cookies and playing Candy Crush. You're not even taking a report. You're patronizing me. So then that's when she got upset. "You don't ask me any questions. I ask you the questions. If this happened on 44th Street, why are you all the way down here on 71st Street? You know, just really going in on me." So I said, "Well, I want to see your sergeant. I want to speak to the supervisor. Let him make the report." Lo and behold, Nyla, the sergeant was behind her the whole time watching, even as I came into the station. So the sergeant now interrupts and says, "Since you want to have an attitude with my officers, get the F out. No report for you. Leave." That's when the camera came on.
Oh, okay. And then what happened after that? What happened after? Because we lots of people all over the world have seen now that video. What happened? What happened after you? Because there were there officers? Did you end up getting your report taken?
I did. There was a fourth officer, and you can see him in the video when he says, "Okay, what happened?" And he mediated. But this means that only one out of four officers in that particular station are prepared to handle the public's complaints. So, you know, he mediated, but after that, and I have this on audio, but I haven't released it. You know, after I finally got my report, one of the officer who was playing Candy Crush says, you know, we're desensitized to this type of thing. You know, we just get so much crazy stuff every day that we're desensitized. And when she said that to me, Nyla, it made me think, what if a heart surgeon were to say, you know, I did five heart surgeries. People aren't taking care of themselves. I'm really desensitized to your heart surgery today. Police, when they take the job, they cannot become desensitized. So now I wonder a few things. Number one is professionalism. What is the protocol for professionalism when you enter a police station? What should they be doing? But number two, do police have the psychological help that they need? Do we have enough police to alleviate all of the overtime that many of our police have to take? I am not a hardliner against police.
In fact, I was going to say, I mean, you've defended police in the past. You've always pointed out they have a job to do. Does this encounter change your opinions on that?
Not at all. But what it does do is it deepens my concern about Joe Smith, John Smith, Sharon Smith, you know, the people who are not Grammy Award winners. You know, we have
who don't have 50,000 followers on Twitter when you tweet out the video that automatically get retweeted thousands of times.
Exactly. You know, we want to make sure that citizens are able to, I mean, what did they say? If you see something, say something. We want to make sure that citizens are able to make reports. I have dozens of emails and DMs from other Chicagoans who said, I wasn't able to make a report either. This is a different situation, Nyla, than, you know, the guy who he was a suspect, he was running, we thought he had a gun, you know, and that type of debate. This is a situation of the average citizen can't communicate with the police. Has to be fixed.
And you got an apology via Twitter within a couple of hours. Mayor Emanuel has been talking about this, saying the officers will be disciplined. Have you had other further communications with CPD or the mayor's office about this?
I have. I've spoken to them, planning on meeting with Mayor Emanuel and Superintendent Johnson soon. They assured me that we would meet to discuss the situations, not about me. And I really don't care about an apology. I mean, that's political, you know. I would much rather know how can we have a citizens review board that can take complaints and help handle these situations for the average citizen.
Che, you know, you also tweeted about the guy who robbed you, and you tweeted how much he's just hurting himself in the community, and you invited him to reach out to you. Did you ever hear from him?
I didn't hear from him, but I'll tell you a good thing. I've heard from, you know, other young men who are maybe in similar desperate situations that say, well, help me get a job. Help me get some training, you know, and that is positive. That to me is success when, you know, young people who are in desperate situations know where they can go to find, you know, help and resources.
Well, and can you share with the audience a little bit about the community work that you do with Donda's House? Because this is a large part of your nonprofit organization and the work you do working with young people on the south side of Chicago.
Donda's House is a premium arts organization where I teach creative writing. We help connect young people with other resources if they are into improv. We have a collaboration with Second City. We help connect them with Blue 1647 for STEM. But overall, I return to Chicago, and I live on the south side because one narrative we hear in hip-hop a lot is, I'm trying to make it out the hood. I'm trying to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And my belief is that is wrong. We can't make it to escape it. We have to make it to rebuild it. And the best way I can do that is through my own example.
What do you tell the kids about what happened to you?
You know, a lot of my young people have reached out to me and said, you know, this is why we told you, you can't trust police, you can't make reports. You know, we are right, you're wrong. You know, and I've had this debate with since this incident with my young people, and I say yes, but as you say that about police, what do you say about the guy who robbed me, who's your age? You know what I mean? If there's no redemption for our system, then how can you defend redemption for the citizens in that system that have been deprived and communities that have been divested from? So, you know, if you have I have sympathy for the person who robbed me, and I have empathy for the police. And through that, we must all come together.
Well, and as we think about this, as you're someone who has been working to try to change that system, whether that's through arts or your nonprofit work or even when you have been your activism, I wonder now how this weekend and the response to it, if that's how that's changed what you do or how you think about things.
It is hardened my belief of why I'm doing what I've been doing. It you know, life has a funny way of reminding you that it's not done with you. And, you know, Saturday, life reminded me that I have more work to do.
And this has been all over the news. You were on CNN. This has been a national story. It's been an international story. What do you want people outside of Chicago to know about this? Because I think people outside of Chicago think what happened to you, you know, happens all the time in Chicago. As you said, if you talked about the desensitization of police, I wonder what you think about the desensitization of even other parts of Chicago or people outside of the city who just think, well, this just happens on the South Side.
You know, I said earlier, Nyla, that even I was normalized to it to a degree where I almost did not make a police report. And so, you know, it's very difficult when not only the city is traumatized, but this country is traumatized by violence. We see mass shootings, you know, almost every week in the news. And we're so traumatized that to forget about it, we begin to ignore it until it touches us. And, you know, there are parts of Chicago now that are plagued with crime that are not the South Side and the West Side. What I would say to the country and to the world is, as King said, an injustice anywhere becomes an injustice everywhere. If we don't tackle the problem of crime in this country in a coherent way, more than just locking people up, we have to invest into communities. We have to invest into people. And we have to come together and stop taking hard lines for political reasons or activist reasons. We have to know that unless we all work together, nothing will change and this country will crumble.
Che, as you do, you wrote a song about this. You went to the studio with Exhibit, a few other guys. It's called Cops and Robbers. And in the song, you say some people were glad that you were robbed. What have people actually said that? Why have people said that to you?
Yes, you know, some of those voices that you know, say that, they'll say this: man, I'm glad you're okay, but I'm happy it happened to you. Because they look at me as someone who has a platform to speak up for things that have happened to them. And so, you know, there are some people that think, well, Rhymefest has resources, he has money, he has, you know, he's not dead, he's all right. So, you know, this happens to us on a daily basis. Yeah, finally, you know, somebody who has more than us feels it, or so they think. And you know, I get that too. I understand that as well. And so what we have to do is even take those voices and elevate them and say, this is what they're feeling.
Let's,
and art is the perfect way to do it.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. I wanted to end the show playing a little bit of your song, Cops and Robbers. But, Che, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Nyla. Cops and robbers, cops and robbers. You can't tell who's who, that's the problem. It's to get deep, can't touch the bottom. I'm glad they robbed them. Suspect. I'm the victim.
I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.
You just dismiss them. Damn. Who broke the system? Cops and robbers, all in business. Get that lawyer, then they listen. Walking solo. What you tripping? What about the robber? I can't call him. Gun to the face, just took the wallet. Desperate, dope fiend, alcohol.